It's your 19th of October 2003 show. Stay with us for 3.5 hours of fun interviews and your voice on the air at 427-3772. Join us. Kill the cop inside. Note, it is talking about killing the police mentality and not talking about shooting police officers. For those of you who are suddenly alarmed and dashing to notify the Office of Homeland Security. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, as long as we continue to exist, 96.3 FM on high alert after San Francisco Liberation Radio was raided on October 15th. Please be alert. When you hear of any kind of calls on the radio that we are being attacked, please listen for the address and dash on down. If you already know the address of the studio, come on down immediately with video cameras, tape recorders, pies, tomatoes, whatever is necessary to express your First Amendment rights and your outrage at the attempted seizure of the public airways by corporate interests. You're tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Also, we broadcast at www.freakradio.org and at 101.1 FM, though I still have trouble hearing it out there on the east side, where that second frequency was set up to deal with Christian overlay, if you will. I should say massive, I'm called bogus pseudo-Christian overlay, commercial Christianity regaling us with endless rock. And blasting out Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's at 101.1 FM. If you want to call into the show, which is going to go on for the next 3.5 hours, you can give a call to 831-427-3772, 831-427-FRSC, for those of you who are numerically challenged, as I am with my learning disabilities. You can also contact us off-air, us being Free Radio Collective, at 427-4523 if you have a public service announcement, if you've got some stuff to give us, if you just want to ask a question or two, or if you've got some communication for a broadcaster. If you have a show, if you want to do a show. I was speaking this morning with a physics professor who I hope will do a science show on the air. We don't have much in the way of science. Hard science. It'll be an interesting addition to the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective. 427-4523 for that voicemail message. Also give you some information about how to get in touch with Free Radio if you got donations, checks you want to give, Numbered bank accounts in Switzerland, we can always use something like that. Give us a call, 427-4523. Again, this show, if you want to call in here, 427-3772 is the phone number. We're going until 1 o'clock, and the first full hour, 10 to 11, after numerous interviews I'm going to play, is going to be devoted to the De Anza sellout crisis, which is going to reach its climax next week. So be sure to tune in and perhaps call in on that issue. Looks like we've got a caller calling in right now. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Roxanne.
Hi, Roxanne.
This is my contribution to the science portion of your program.
Excellent. Actually, we'll be talking about entomology, perhaps?
Water boils at 210 degrees, okay?
Excellent. Thank you very much.
I just felt I wanted you to be well-rounded.
When do people's tempers and patience boil over?
You know, I'm not sure, but I am looking forward to the De Anza climax.
Boy, well, I wish I were looking forward to it, but it's coming whether we're looking forward to it or not.
Well, you know, climaxes are climaxes.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Hey, wait a minute now. Don't go away. Roger, going to give us a little update on the Orly and Stacy situation?
Oh, it's not too early for that?
No, let's go for it.
Oh, well.
Unless you think you want to put it off.
Oh, no, I don't need to put it off. Robert, can I turn down my radio?
Sure, I'll give a little intro while you do.
Okay.
This is Roxana Kista-Pache, who works with independent advocacy. She helps folks concerned with organizations like CPS, particularly CPS, Child Protective Services, whose children are not being protected, but in fact being confiscated by this agency. Roxanne was speaking, hi Roxanne, recently about Stacy and Orly Jones, who lost 4 children in April and have been struggling month after month to get them back. Go ahead, Roxanne. You there?
Hi, Robert. Mm-hmm. I can barely hear you on the phone, so I'm trying to adjust my radio low enough that...
Okay, how's that? Can you hear me now?
Barely.
How about now? It's a strange situation. I'm coming off pretty loud on my radio.
Okay, I've got you half on the radio and half on the phone. That'll be totally okay.
Okay, sounds good. Go ahead.
Okay, well, we all sat around like big dummies last week waiting for Clint Eastwood to call. He is the Commissioner of Parks and Recreation. And Stacy...
That's Clint Stacy Eastwood. Wait, that's Clint Eastwood, the actor?
Pardon?
The actor?
Yeah, Clint Eastwood, the actor.
The Carmel millionaire?
I'm on radio with Robert.
Huh.
And Stacy ran into him in downtown Santa Cruz and actually just wanted an autograph. She really likes him. But when she saw him getting into a car marked Commissioner of Parks and Recreation, she decided to talk to him about her plight since her children were taken from a camping ground. And he expressed great interest. He cleared up some real mysteries about the first report on the taking of the children. We've been told CPS has it. We've been told it isn't typed. We've been told, you know, a bunch of things, and have been unable to locate the first report when they took the children without a warrant from the park, which the park rangers participated in. And I guess, Robert, I can't get you on my radio, so if you're talking, talk really loud.
No, I'm not talking yet. Go ahead. You're
okay.
Talking.
Okay. Anyway, it turns out that first report goes directly to the district attorney. If the district attorney finds nothing in the report that he feels is prosecutable, then that report goes back to... the district attorney. It never goes to CPS, and they never have a right to it. So that was something he cleared up. However, his phone appointment for this last Friday night at 7 never materialized. And, you know, we sat here till 9 o'clock at night waiting. Orly and Stacy dug deep into their pockets to pay a cell phone bill to make sure that the phone was on when he called. It was pretty disappointing. Not really unexpected, but very disappointing.
Were you able to leave a message with Clint's, I don't know whether it's his Hollywood agents or his Parks and Rec office?
I'm going to go up on the computer and just do the park commissioner, you know, the Commissioner of Parks and Recreation, and email their office if that's possible, or send a letter that we had waited. I mean, I don't really feel like he's going to get in touch with us. But I do feel like if nothing else, everybody in his office should know he's being a big jerk. But the other thing that I worried about, too, was it seemed to me that he's smart enough not to come into this blind. And so if he called, being Clint Eastwood, people would talk to him. If he called CPS or called offices, he also may have been tainted, you know, and felt he didn't want to get involved. At which point, I still feel he owed them some sort of a voicemail message or something, you know.
Well, given that Clint has been silent, what have the real advocates like yourself been doing, and what have Stacy and Orly been doing on this case to get back, what, their 3-year-old, their 6-year-old? Who are the other two?
They have a 10 and a 12-year-old.
And they have been able to, what, talk to these people once every week or some
such? Well, they talk to them frequently. I just want to point out these are all sort of disjointed things, but really agonizing things that have happened on this case. Their 3-year-old girl was moved because she was covered with bruises all the time and bite marks at the house that she was at.
The foster home, not the Stacy and Orly.
Right, the foster home.
The first foster home she was sent to, apparently there was some, she was bruising herself a lot there. That was what they were saying.
Well, she was biting herself in the middle of the back, which made us think she should enter the Olympics.
Was it a Hindu household where people were teaching her how to be a contortionist, perhaps?
Right. Mm-hmm. She was also in a non-English-speaking household, which is very, very strange because she speaks no Spanish and actually has some speech difficulties, some speech delays. So that was also of great concern to her parents because she's going to school for speech therapy and then comes home to a foster home where she can't understand anyone. However, she was moved and she has an allergy to strawberries. Now, anybody that has strawberry allergies knows that the more strawberries you eat, eventually you're going to have an anaphylactic reaction. It's actually a cumulative allergy that gets worse every time you eat what you're allergic to, strawberries and kiwis being the worst offenders. And the social worker never bothered to inform the foster mother that the child was allergic to strawberries. And so she came to her next visit just broken out all over. Nobody knew what was wrong with her. When Stacy spoke with the foster mother and told her that she's allergic to allergies, the new foster mother was like, well, no one told me. I mean, she's been eating strawberries every day. So that was actually a matter of life and death, as far as I'm concerned, that they put that little 3-year-old in. And the reason I say that is because I have allergies and I have had anaphylactic reactions where your throat closes. And you really only have minutes to get to a hospital. It's a very serious thing. So that was one way that I feel that her life was just put in danger by being in the foster care system, not to mention all the other ways. I mean, we have to remember, what are they saving these kids from? They don't like Orly's my way or the highway style of fathering.
And what is that style?
Well, where his kids don't get a say. You know, like, he's a very
authoritarian, patriarchal,
authoritarian, pig-headed, nice guy. Uh-huh. I mean, sometimes I could kick Orly's butt, but the real deal is he's who he is.
Uh-huh.
And they keep trying to flip him out every way they can, like he's a fundamentalist Christian. Well, you know how fundamentalist Christians feel about being gay.
Mm-hmm.
So they have taken him in and told him that they believe that his younger son is gay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it's like, well, let's see what he's going to do. Is he going to flip out? Is he going to disown his son? They do all these things to this family that you wouldn't believe.
Now, the original reason that they took these kids was because of a complaint that he was smoking marijuana and having sex in front of the kids, something like that?
The person suspected that he and his wife were having sex in front of the children. He has a prescription for medical marijuana. The person reported him for smoking marijuana. And also, his kids did what he told them. When he spoke, they stopped what they were doing immediately. And the person took that
too obedient
as a sign that they were terrified of their father.
Uh-huh. And this was from his motor, home, from his RV, right?
Right.
And so this happened, but there's really the homeless issue that really kind of enters in here because they've been demanding, CPS has been demanding he find housing?
Yes, and actually their lawyer has told them that they are too poor. Stacy's lawyer has said to her that they are too poor to provide the optimum lifestyle for their children.
Now, this is the lawyer for the parents has conceded this to the courts or to the CPS?
No, she has said it privately to Stacy.
So the lawyer, supposedly representing the interests of the mother, has told the mother that really perhaps you should let the kids go or something?
Well,
you're too poor for this situation. Give the kids to some richer
parents. I don't think that she suggested they let the kids go. I think that what she's saying is you probably won't see your kids again, you know, like ever be parenting them. What she said to her was CPS is concerned, as am I, that you are poor. You are so poor.
Why is she keeping this lawyer? I think we've talked about this before.
There's a point where they will probably fire their lawyers.
Maybe it should have been a couple months ago.
And it probably will be at trial time. I think that they are going to choose a trial rather than go through this. They can drag you through this for 15 months.
Now, I thought there was a six-month sort of key deadline cutoff point here.
For the baby.
What has that point has been passed?
That point has been passed, but while they're still in family reunification, they have a total of time from the time the children were taken until the end point, which is 15 months. So what they do, like they did with Chaya, is they drag you through hell for 15 months, and then they say, oh, we don't think they should have the kids, even though you've completed everything the court asked you to.
Now, you've also said that the original supposed reason that they were taken, which could be construed as a kind of a form of criminal behavior, I guess. I don't know. It's not really criminal behavior, but that they're originally with some sort of quasi-criminal behavior alleged, and that was, you found that was not even considered, and then that those reports were suppressed by CPS?
I don't know what you're saying.
Oh, I just recall
quasi-criminal?
I don't know. You mentioned some report had been suppressed by CPS because they hadn't written it yet. They kept saying that they hadn't.
Well, no, that's the Parks and Recreation report I was telling you about. CPS kept, the judge has asked for it repeatedly, and CPS has said...
Has asked for what?
Has asked for the Parks and Recreation report made on the day of the seizure of the children since the park rangers participated.
So to say what the heck was going on, why were these kids taken, in essence?
Right.
The key report.
What was the very first thing? Because all we have is CPS's report of what happened, which is always jaded. And the judge has asked for the original report made by the rangers.
And for some reason, this report was not available month after month after month?
Pardon?
For some reason, the report was not available month after month?
Well, the CPS said it wasn't typed yet. 6 months later, they were telling the judge it wasn't typed yet.
Well, maybe they were looking for a typewriter.
Pardon?
Maybe they were looking for a typewriter. Typewriters are hard to find these
days.
Well,
it really wasn't true. I finally said to Stacy and Orly, as they kept giving me this answer over and over again, as I requested it, I kept saying to them, this is ridiculous. So I called the head ranger, who told me that report was typed the night it happened, that the rangers cannot go home until the report is typed. So that means it was available from that very first night.
So either CPS was giving you misinformation or they were misinformed, huh?
They were giving the judge misinformation.
Wait a minute. Are you saying the CPS would distort facts to Judge Yance?
I would say that.
My goodness.
I would say that strongly.
For heaven's sake.
And I would probably stake my life on it because they could never pass the lie detector test. There isn't one person in there.
When's the next court appearance for these folks?
Well, if I just want you to let me finish about that report, if
sure.
You don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
That report is the one that I opened the program with telling you that Clint Eastwood said that it was given to the district attorney, and when there is no offense, when they see nothing to be prosecuted, it is sent back to Parks and Recreation. So that tells me there was nothing in that report, that report is actually very important. We can't get it. It has to be subpoenaed by the judge. But I'm just saying that there must have not been enough in there.
So you haven't got that report yet, but that it has been sent to the judge?
No, it hasn't been. It's in, as far as we know from Mr. Clint Eastwood, it is still in the ranger's office because it was sent to the DA immediately the next day. That is processed, and the DA, if there has been no charges brought against Orly and Stacy, which there have not been any criminal charges, that was then shot back to the ranger's office. CPS would not get that report.
You need to make a Public Records Act request for the report, and if it doesn't work, you get a little demonstration to go down to the ranger's office and present the public view on their failure to comply with the law and their failure to give documentation that's important in reunifying a family.
Well, you know, we hope it's important. You know, you take a chance because you don't know how it's worded by the Rangers either, but I can only surmise that it couldn't be very strong or the DA would have gotten involved. Mm-hmm. However, let me make the point that almost every case that I have done advocacy on, there has been no criminal charges. It has been sent to the DA by whoever was making the allegation, and the DA, sheriff's office, whoever was in charge of investigating these cases that CPS carries to the nth degree, has said, we have investigated and we find nothing.
But isn't CPS, speaking as devil's advocate here, saying in essence, well, no, we don't want to criminally prosecute these parents. We want to find some middle ground, and if we can, we will. And therefore, in almost all cases, we won't find a criminal prosecution. We'll find some other avenue.
They don't want, there would be nothing for them. The family would not, there would be no reason for the family to be separated if they weren't acting outside the law and separating people from their children when there is no criminal reason to.
So there actually has to be a, well, are most CPS separations also concurrent with criminal prosecutions of the parents? I wasn't
aware
of that.
No, they're very seldom concurrent with it. I mean, you know, foster parents are constantly, when a teenager wants to get out of a foster parent's home, when they're too authoritarian or there's a reason they don't like it, often they know the secret word is molest. I mean, foster parents, some foster parents are bad, but most of them are excellent and are really trying to provide a good service for children. And I have seen homes brought down by a teenager who screamed molest, and then you find out she screamed molest in the last four homes. The foster parent took the child in, was not told about her past history, has the foster child for two or three months. Foster child says, I don't like it here. So, and the DA's office will investigate, the sheriff's office, everybody will get involved because molest is a big deal, and find that there's nothing there, but the foster home will have been closed down by the county. They will not listen. They will not talk. The foster parents can have children that have been there 4 or 5 years, and all of a sudden the kids have to change foster parents. You know, I mean, the kids are the losers. As far as I'm concerned, the kids are the losers with CPS.
So,
and it was very interesting. When they went to move Stacy and Orly's 3-year-old again, Stacy was crying and talking to her lawyer and said, look, isn't it going to upset her? Now she's being separated from all of her brothers and sisters, and, you know, she's moving to yet another home. And
in this first home she had been, in her second home she'd been there with her sister then, in other words.
She had been in the first foster home with her sister.
Uh-huh.
And Stacy was crying and her lawyer said to her, oh, you've been talking to that Roxanne Aquistapache person who, she'll do fine. She'll do fine. She's little. She'll adjust. And, you know, I really, when I heard that, I just wanted to go claw the woman's eyes out, you know, it being that she's hardly verbal, so she can hardly express how upset she'll be. It's not that she won't be traumatized. It's that, well, we won't know about it, you know. Also, I wanted to bring up something. Stacy and Orly are only allowed to talk to their children on the phone 7 minutes to 10 minutes apiece, twice a week.
How often?
Pardon?
How often? I'm sorry. Twice
Just
a week?
Twice a week.
Uh-huh.
And the 3-year-old, the tapes of her talking to her parents are so telling. I mean, she comes to the phone and she's like, Mommy, Daddy, home, take me home. I love you, home, home. That's all she says. She just is like, she is very bonded to her parents. I do not know how she has stayed that bonded with the lengthy separation we're going on.
Roxanne, we're running into a time crunch here. Can you summarize what's going to be coming up here and how people can help?
I want to say that the foster parent feels that it's too upsetting to the child to talk to her parents. So she wants the calls cut down even further. She does not like it that the child is sad when she talks. She doesn't like the visits because the child is hard to handle afterwards, which is a normal thing. These kids keep all this anguish and heartache pent up.
What's coming up, Roxanne? We gotta press you, sorry.
Robert, I'm not interested in what's coming up. I'm telling you what I'm interested in, okay? I'm the guest, and I want to finish this story.
Okay, well, finish her up, then we're going to roll.
considering I waited for you many times for an hour or 2 hours to get back to
I'm
me.
Sorry. Go ahead. We can also talk about this later in the show. That's another possibility.
So anyway, that's all I want to say is that they even want to cut this little three-year-old's communication with her parents further. And to me, that is a crime. Stacy and Arlie will be going to mediation, I believe, around the 27th. And then if they don't like what happens in mediation, I believe they will choose trial.
And that will be, soon after?
Because then they'd be eligible for at least an appeal. It's a very frightening thing because if for any reason they lose at trial is just in front of the judge. You are not allowed a jury of your peers like in other instances. And so if the judge decides against them, then they will not be seeing their children at all unless they win an appeal. So this is a really frightening thing for them.
How can people help?
Pardon?
How can people help?
Robert, I don't know the answer to that. Honestly, I don't.
Okay.
I wish I did.
All right. Well, if you come up with any thoughts, you know, drop us a line and we will pass it on.
We really would like to get on the Oprah show. We would like to get on Dr. Phil. That's what we'd really like. Not local publicity, but actually national.
Okay. Well, if Oprah, if you're listening, call 423-4833. Which is the Huff line off here.
I mean, that's how desperate we feel the situation is. Thanks very much.
Hey, thank you, Roxanne. Good luck to the two, to Stacy and Orly. And again, feel free to call later in the show. I just got this 10 to 11 slot I got to get
to. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. And that was the situation with Stacy and Orly Jones and their four children. If anybody has any comments on that, very briefly, we can roll. But I'm going to now get into the 10 to 11 slot, which I promised would be concerned with the City Council sellout of the De Anza seniors, which is a proceeding apace with a vilification campaign against the De Anza seniors as sort of self-interested, wealthy elders who are, I don't know, sucking the community dry with their economic demands for special interest protection. I guess that's not quite how Rotkin is putting it explicitly, but that really is the subliminal, or actually that's the message that goes out in nicer language from the Santa Cruz City Council, and that's the issue that will be coming up no doubt on Tuesday, day after tomorrow, when Vice Mayor Kennedy's Revenue Enhancement Ad Hoc Task Force, whatever it's called, Ballot Measure Task Force, which is actually one of the two committees the Budget Committee was split into so it could meet in secret throughout August and September, and now is finally having its first public meeting on Tuesday, no doubt after they've dotted their I's, crossed their T's, and going to come out with what they want to do with, of course, the public comment period so they can show how democratic they are and then proceed to what they wanted to do in the first place. Happening as well, that's 7 o'clock at Santa Cruz City Council Chambers day after tomorrow, Tuesday night. It's going to be, they're looking to put measures on the ballot to enhance the revenue of the city so they can keep the city manager's salary what it is, keep the police department fully funded while slashing social services 10%, and of course waiving the magic scare story around about the closing the major facilities, the Loudoun Nelson Center, the Harvey West Pool, or sacrificing the seniors. There is no other choice, right? Uh-huh. That's the line that the City Council is putting out to try to get people to back down on the referendum, which now looks like it has a significant number of signatures. The referendum, of course, is the response by the community and the De Anza seniors and Clearview Court folks to essentially preserve mobile home rent control, which is what we have in Santa Cruz. It's a form of rent control passed in the early 90s, a bad law written by John Barisoni against the advice of people like Attorney Will Constantine, who I heard yesterday at a meeting of the Golden State Mobile Homeowners Association. I think that's it. That could be wrong, a word or two, but that's an occasional meeting, a regular meeting of a group concerned with the human rights and interests of folks who live in mobile home parks, many of whom are seniors, many of whom are moderate to low income, none of whom are living extremely lavishly. You know, I mean, there's a big PR deal about how these kind of, it's not actually explicit again. It's that some of the seniors live in this very fancy property by the ocean in these mobile homes that are not really mobile homes anymore. They are sort of permanent homes, fancy palatial estates that are next to the ocean worth $500,000 and so forth. And some of them, of course, because of the location, do have considerable value or would have will have until October 23rd when the City Council's law goes into effect, which will essentially give to the owners of the mobile home park manufactured housing Communities, is that what it is? How did that, or housing, or MHC it's called. The huge corporation that's been, among other mobile home park owners, suing throughout the state cities to kill rent control laws, and are doing it apparently quite effectively in Santa Cruz. The situation has reached a point where the De Anza residents got this referendum on the ballot to respond to the city council's collapse, where they said, okay, we'll dump rent control that we put in 10 years ago in response to the alleged huge legal fees that are being racked up by this lawsuit, and because we're in such a crisis. I had a very interesting conversation. Well, I had some interesting questions that I put, and I got some interesting answers from Will Constantine, this attorney, at the Golden State Mobile Homeowners Association meeting yesterday at the Brookview, I think it's, or is it Brookview Terrace? Again, I'm often a word or two off on these the names of these parks, but it was a meeting of folks concerned about these issues. There were some De Anza folks there, including former city council candidate Dick Dubrava, who and his wife, Diane, who are in the De Anza mobile home, and apparently they've come to the decision they want to they want people to sign the lease and not turn in the signatures for the referendum, because the referendum would overturn the city council's law, kill the settlement, require the city to go back to court to keep fighting. And I guess the fear is that the city council, in vindictive retaliation, or let's say out of economic self-defense to protect the interests of the broader community, certainly will kill rent control in a separate second ordinance. But of course, I don't think that they would get away with that either. I think the same people who circulated the referendum the first time, supported by a larger segment of the community, because this is clearly not even a deal to save, supposedly, to put through this settlement. This would be just a straight destruction of rent control. I think there would be a citywide response supporting the seniors on this. At least I'm hoping that's the case. So I don't know. I think I disagree with Dick's assessment of the situation. I know the issue is going to be coming up at De Anza soon. They're going to be meeting in a couple of days to discuss what to do. Should they take these 3,000 to 6,000 signatures that they have gathered? I'm not quite sure how many they are. They need about 3,400, something like that, registered City of Santa Cruz voters, to put the issue on the ballot, which will suspend the city council's law until the election. And the city council probably won't allow an election because it's too expensive. Instead, they'll simply rescind the law that they voted, and then figure out what to do. And as I said, the first opportunity for real public input is going to be day after tomorrow at the Kennedy hearings on the issue of ballot measures for raising revenue for, well, they're claiming it's for everything, but of course it's going to include the De Anza situation, where they decided, as I said, to simply sell out to MHC De Anza puts it to cover, many people at De Anza put it, to cover the bad decisions of City Attorney John Barisoni when he initially wrote this law back in 1994, which allowed for price caps. I mean, not only was it rent control, but it was price caps, which said you can't sell the homes beyond a certain price, so that supposedly to be fair to the to make it low-income, affordable housing, which added a legal hook for the MHC to go into court, because they're claiming that the affordable housing is not being followed because the homes aren't affordable. Whoops. Let's try again, caller. I know there's a caller who's tried twice, or maybe two callers, to get in here. 427-3772. If you call again, I will answer that phone, so feel free to do so. I'm going to sort of go through some of my notes and let you know what happened at that meeting, because I think a lot was said that was of great interest, at least it interested me. I tried to get Will Constantine, the attorney, to come on the show, or even just to be available for call-ins, and it's sad that he won't. Apparently he feels he's got some specific legal responsibility to the particular clients he has, or maybe he's got time problems, but he certainly was generous in giving of his time to speak to the folks at the GG Association, the Mobile Home Association meeting at yesterday. So I'm going to skip some of this stuff because it's not, some of it is of more interest to mobile home folks generally. But in the Santa Cruz situation, Constantine summed it up by saying that we have a form of economic blackmail going on that MHC is using. They successfully apparently used it in Hollister, where there are only, 200 people for the last 15 years in rent-controlled parks. I guess there are only two parks in Hollister, as I understand it from what he said. The owners have sued repeatedly there, and they've lost every lawsuit, not the owners of the homes, but the owners of the property, because they want to raise the rents on the property. But the city decided it couldn't recover attorney's fees, so in order to cut and run, it sold out the seniors there. I don't know whether they've sold them out with leases in the same way as their city council here is selling them out, but apparently that was done. But that apparently is the only city where it's been done. Elsewhere, they have not done that. De Anza has about 200 coaches, homes, so to speak, mobile homes. Clearview Court has 75. So the issue the city says is, why spend money for fighting MHC for only 300 residents of the city? That is their argument. Here's a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert Norris.
Oh, no, it's Uncle Bob.
This may or may not be a mistake, but I do want to sound in on the De Anza issue.
And you are, in fact, should we say where you live?
I live at De Anza with my wife.
Uh-huh.
And we are both not in favor of turning in the referendum.
Okay, go ahead.
If you look at the situation here, if you look at that lease, 34 years, if you look at the possibility of this referendum backfiring into a much worse situation for the people that are here, the wise thing to do would be to not turn it in. I want to applaud Dick DeBrava for coming out publicly and making that statement. Now, I want to say this, too, about the people that are ranting about rent control here at De Anza. I didn't see any of them that were out publicly supporting rent control 4 years ago.
Well, I was out there with you.
They're all about their own equity, which is really not their equity, Robert. Somebody else owns the land here. MHC, which is Mobile Homes Communities, owns the land. So when Herb Rossman, who claims to be a lawyer, says that they own the dirt, it's very disingenuous. They own the land, Mr. Rossman. They own the property. And Herb Rossman has a unit, if you will, facing the ocean. Beautiful. As does Sterling Frost, facing the ocean, one unit over from Natural Bridges. Jane and I live towards the back. We love it here.
So we should say, Bob, we should say Sterling Frost is the president of the association.
Right. Herb Rossman is another driving force.
And the two of them have spoken about this issue publicly at city council.
Right. So when they say equity, what are they talking about? The cost of their mobile home or the inflated cost that they might be able to realize because you got to buy in to get here, as Jane and I had to buy in to get here, because of rent control. Now, I support rent control. I think most of us would wish that the situation would remain the way that it was, okay? That's not a reality. But I think for most people here, 34 years of rent control, Robert, is not a bad scene. And the people that I talk to, the ones that are spearheading this effort, they're not coming up for any kind of moderated, sincere approach and recognizing that MHC owns the property. They're talking about their own little piece of the action, how they want to cash in, and how it's their right. And to me, that's so insincere and essentially greedy and selfish that I can't find myself supporting it. In fact, I did sign the initiative, the referendum, but if they turn it in, I will have my I will request to have my name removed.
And indeed, in today's Sentinel, I think the little small story in one of the back sections talks about 20 or 30 signatures being rescinded. Of course, that's out of thousands that have been, you know, gathered. But you're right; it may be that that will happen after some are turned in.
If they do turn this in, because
if they
talk to people around here, there are a rational, moderate few that tend to get shouted down, okay, when they talk, who voice similar opinions to what I'm voicing right now. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. Everybody would wish that it would remain the way that it was. It's not reality. The city of Santa Cruz is not going to stick its neck out, in my opinion, nor should it, for 300 people. I mean, let's be real. 34 years of rent control is going to be as long as most people live, and beyond that.
Of course, the issue is really, will people be able to sell their coaches for anything at all?
Yeah, you bet. And here's the thing, the longer
will.
That this issue gets dragged out, no one knows. And MHC doesn't know whether they're going to be able to score 5,000 for the units out front. That might not be where it lands, Robert, but certainly it's worth more than the $780 that Herb and Sterling are paying.
Mm-hmm.
Do you follow me? So, as I expressed in the late 90s, I'm not necessarily opposed to vacancy decontrol with rent control.
And vacancy decontrol, for those who don't know, is the right of the landlord, or in this case, the dirt owner, or the ground owner, or the property owner, if you will, depending on who you're talking to raise the rents to market value or beyond once a tenant vacates, or I should say once an owner transfers sale of the coach, right?
And then it goes back under rent control. To me, that's very sincere. As long as you live there, you've got rent control. When you move out, the property owner gets a benefit from their investment, just like you benefit from your investments, Robert.
Well, there was
to give you independent means. To me, this is very sincere. When you're playing this issue to be insincere and one-sided, it's going to be so easy to slam it down.
Okay.
That to me, these people are coming out so absurdly ridiculous.
Well, I guess perhaps one needs to look at a case to see if, in fact, that, you know, I mean, I heard, you've spoke to me about your position off air, and I guess the question I have a number of questions, but regarding the particular issue you're talking about, could people actually sell their coaches if the rents are going up 3 to 7 times? They are going up 3 to 7 times, according to what MHC has said. Specifically,
they're going to initially go up to what MHC thinks they can get, and
right.
Then they're going to probably settle back to some reality.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I don't really think, and nor do most people think, they're going to get $5,000.
What about the issue that it's multiple-use property and MHC has other uses for this parking
lot?
Well,
here's what I heard yesterday. They did remove the stipulation in the lease that you can't do a class action suit. If MHC tried to pull a fast move, like they want to put condos in here, the tenants could do a class action suit.
Doesn't that cost a lot of money? Lots and lots of bucks.
I think it's much better bucks spent than what's going on right now.
What I heard from Constantine yesterday was that the reason that the tenants have not been pursuing actions against MHC, and that because no large law firms, and you would need a large law firm with lots of people and lots of push, will take this case on contingency. So they have to raise millions of dollars up front, and that is not going to happen, according to. Well, not many millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands, anyway, you know, up front.
Let's call him One Voice, and I've heard from other people that have hired lawyers. This lease, 34 years, which is backed by a judge, is not going to be that easy to weasel out of. Now, let me come back to the issue of selling your space. There is a lot of panic going on. Nobody knows. It's eventually going to settle out somewhere, Robert. It's still worth something to live here. It's a very beautiful park. This is spectacular here. It's you got the ocean in front of you. You got Anthony Light Pond behind you. You got natural bridges
I understand all that. But isn't the likely outcome of this that MHC, if it chooses to do so, can essentially tell incoming tenants, no, the rent's going to be $4,000 or $5,000 or $1,500 or 3 or 4 times what you know, even though it's been going up incrementally small amounts every year of those 34 years, once the 75-year-old average age population person dies in 7 years, wasn't that the average expected lifespan of a person who's 75, then, you know, you have a huge increase in the rent, and, you know, it sits there waiting to be sold. It doesn't get sold. It gets, and they get the bill for the first month, the person who inherits this once the person dies, and they say, I'm not going to pay $4,000 a month for this. So it gets, you know, after 2 months, it gets essentially, MHC gets it. It gets sold off to MHC. They can then turn around and do what they want with it. They can destroy it. They can put up new stuff. They then control the area.
I don't see it that way. I see a 34-year lease. I see class action suits if they try to do some fast maneuvers.
Wait a minute. You know, that's not going to stop.
I see,
you think they can get an injunction? I mean, that's the question. See, MHC and other owners have repeatedly gone to court again and again with heavy financial power. What makes you think the people who are in the coaches are going to be any more successful than the people who are, I admit, Barisoni is not my favorite attorney, no question about it, and I think this was an incompetent law he drew up. But the fact is he has more legal power, he has a bigger legal staff than most of the attorneys that people can afford in this complex, don't you think?
You're throwing a lot of ifs out there. If MHC decides to condoize this joint, which is not necessary.
Well, not even condoize it. Confiscate, you know, I mean, to do the normal thing that you do with someone. When you receive a bill that your grandpappy's coach is now going to cost you $4,000 a month, you don't pay it. You're not going to pay $4,000 a month. You put it up for sale, and nobody else wants to buy it at $4,000 a month in the next 2 months, and then MHC gets it. Isn't that the story?
I think those issues remain to be seen. What I see... I would say there's going to be some hurt over the first two or three sales, and then there's going to be some leveling out. People, there has to be a way to find out what people will pay to move in here, okay, versus what MHC in their paper charts back in Chicago I think they can charge. There's going to be some kind of a meeting of the accounting minds
okay.
at some level, Robert.
Well, Robert,
it's gonna level out.
Bob, let's see what others think about this, and you can certainly call back with some responses.
I appreciate those that are voicing the reality that this.
Person, maybe I'm misguided, but I don't think I'm greedy. But
I would
greedy
say you're
justice,
misguided,
yeah.
Robert.
Yep. What's that?
I would say you're misguided.
I understand your thoughts on that.
Even about yourself.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much, Bob, and feel free to call
and
back.
As I said, no one would, including myself, would not wish that it would
gotcha.
Stay the way that it was.
Now you said that. I understand that.
All right. But
all right.
Given the reality, given
gotcha.
2003,
gotcha.
34-year lease, it's not a bad deal.
Thanks, Bob. Bye-bye. And I'm cutting Bob off because what he's essentially said it made his point, and no doubt has other points to make and hope that those will be made in a subsequent call. But I want to give others a chance to give a response to that if they want. 427-3772 is a phone number to call in here at Free Radio. We're talking about what I call the De Anza City Council sellout of the seniors there. And you've heard a different point of view from one of the residents, Bob LaMonica, there. I'm going to again continue with what I learned from Will Constantine at this meeting yesterday, and of course it's only one person's opinion as Bob LaMonica points out, but I'm going to present it anyway because it seems to me to raise some important issues. So he was summarizing what Bob was saying, that the residents are going to lose all their equity in the trailers, which means, and the coaches, which means that they won't be worth anything. They'll be hard to sell. Certainly they'll sell for much less, and they'll be hard to sell. Maybe they won't sell at all. Constantine seemed to think they wouldn't sell at all. Now, again, that was his perspective. And he doesn't, I don't think he lives there, and Bob lives there, so Bob is, you know, he has a certain interest in what's going on. He doesn't want to certainly cheat himself out of all the money. I imagine he thinks he's going to be able to sell his coach if and when he needs to. Constantine pointed out that the homeowners proposed a special assessment district where two-thirds would agree to be assessed and willing to be taxed to pay for the lawsuit that the city says is the city attorney and the city council say and the city manager say are stripping it down or sucking away its money. The city instead presented a plan to tax all residents rather than a few, which is a strange approach. It seemed to sort of, it dismissed the proposed $100 a month from each of the residents tax assessment district that they would tax themselves to pay for this lawsuit. And instead said that they would propose a citywide tax and tax everybody for De Anza, which is not what the De Anza people said they were looking for. His belief was that the MHC's proposed rent increases from $500 to $800 up to $4,000 to $5,000 is ludicrous and bizarre, and that... We'll take this call and we'll talk some more as this proceeds here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Becky calling in.
Hey, Becky. Are you a De Anza resident?
I am not a De Anza resident. I just wanted to give kind of a brief comment on Bob LaMonica's take on things. First, Bob is one of the youngest residents at De Anza. So he's one of the few, I think there are like five people that are under 55. He might be 55, but... People who 34 years, they could probably live 34 years and take full advantage of it, unlike the vast majority of the tenants there. So he may be, his interests may be a little cross purposes to some of the other residents there. Also, MHC can find ways to get people evicted for lease violations. They've put, what is this, these 44-page leases with lots and lots of provisions. I mean, if you don't maintain the landscaping, you know, your petunias are too wilted, they could call that a lease violation and drag you to court. And they've got the money to do it, too. I think they've proven that. And the residents can't really sell, so they get evicted for some lease violation. Then they say, okay, well, they could try to move their unit to somewhere else, but there really are not a lot of good mobile home spaces that are empty that you can move it to. And they don't move very easily, too. So there's expense moving them, and there's also, you know, damage that occurs to them during moving them. So in most cases, they won't be able to move them. And then they can't sell them because MHC can charge whatever it wants, market rate or well above market rate in terms of rent. They hold that card completely. So the unit will ultimately go into foreclosure. And there, I think there is one unit there currently that's already in foreclosure because of the situation. So MHC will, in the end, be able to get the entire unit and make control of the property underneath it. And then we'll see Yuppie Condo City come in as MHC rebuilds those spaces with whatever kind of unit they can put on there that's going to get the maximum dollars that they can charge. And all that rent money will be going out of state forever. The end.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Give your thoughts on the De Anza controversy reaching its climax in the next week, because these signatures have to be turned in by October 23rd, or there will be no referendum, and all the work of the seniors and the community in gathering them will have been for nothing, at least in terms of getting a freeze on this law. Continuing what I learned yesterday, or what I was told yesterday, Will Constantine thinks that the city has engaged, city council that is, has engaged in a campaign of essentially financial terror, which is pure baloney. They've exaggerated the likelihood of damages, the amount of damages, and the cost of attorney's fees. The idea that MHC is going to recover $12 million that it requests, he thinks, is utterly preposterous. And he went through some of the specific lawsuits itemizing what was going on, something the city council did not do, at least I have not heard them do at its meetings. He said that he figured it was more likely to have 100,000, maybe up to $1 million in damages, and the damages would be, in essence, if some people sold their trailers for violated the sales cap prices on their trailers when they sold them, then the amount of money that they made would go to MHC, or the amount of money MHC might have made in increased rents and so forth, that in terms of the sale. Though again, that shouldn't really be going to MHC either. That should be money that's, the reason prices are being kept down is not to benefit or penalize MHC, it is to provide for affordable housing in the city. And that would amount to no more than $1 million at most, maybe $100,000. This was according to Constantine's estimates. He said, well, it's always possible that a very corporate judge could try to award them $12 million, but he says that is highly unlikely, highly unlikely. And to take these estimates as the basis for terrorizing the city, as the city attorney and the city council has done, is highly irresponsible, which is nothing new for the city council and the city attorney, in pursuing their own agendas and essentially enforcing their own judgments and opinions on the community. Because if they, in a way, if they, this isn't Constantine's opinion, this is my opinion, if they back down here, it starts exposing the house of cards elsewhere, and they don't want to do that. This is a significant thing, so they have to hang together and maintain the illusion of perfectibility, the illusion of infallibility. There we are. So he also pointed out that the legal fees, the idea that the attorneys are going to be paid $800 an hour legal fees for all of their lawsuits if they win one, is also preposterous. And that's another basis on which this huge figure that Barisoni and the city manager and Rotkin have come up with is being presented. By the way, Rotkin was invited to appear on this show and did not, as I understand it. Maybe my producer didn't call him, but I asked her to, and maybe I think she did. So, he has had an opportunity. Mayor Riley was informed. I informed her personally, I should say, by voicemail of this show. She is, she's never been willing to be on the air with me. And indeed, I can appreciate it that I'm a pretty strong critic of her administration. So indeed, it would, you know, it might take a particular type of person to do it. Rotkin has been on the air on other occasions with me in the past, but has not gone on the air with me on these issues. He hasn't been willing to so far. So we'll see if he's willing to go on in the near future. He's not returned calls, for example, on the downtown ordinances, where I was going to have him and Joe Williams debating things, that question whether the downtown ordinances laws against the poor downtown are criminalization of the poor and a war on the poor. Apparently, Mike doesn't think that's an issue worthy of public discussion and not in this forum. But anyway, people have been invited to this forum to speak, and they're still invited. If anybody's listening in from the city council, if you have the courage, please call in. You'll be given the time to speak and to respond to these arguments, and I hope you do. But I'm really interested in the rest of the community and what you think out there. Please give a call, 427-3772. Constantine, the attorney who's been advising some of the De Anza residents and was speaking at this general meeting of homeowners, he was telling the homeowners that homeowners being the trailer owners, they call it, the trailers are their homes, mobile homes, not very mobile, that the situation in Santa Cruz is a very specialized one, that it doesn't affect really Capitola and other mobile home parks. As I've suggested, this may be kind of have a domino effect. He denied that. He said, well, Santa Cruz is special for two reasons. One is that it's such a small proportion, such a small constituency of mobile homeowners in Santa Cruz. There are only two that are owned by people other than the tenants. One is owned by the tenants, the El Rio, which isn't involved here. The other two, Clearview Court and De Anza, are owned by owners separate from the owners of the coaches, but that only amounts to about 300 coaches, 250, 300 coaches, 600 people, maybe 700 or 800 or something like that. And it ain't that many people. Actually, it's about 600 people if you add them up, something like that. And therefore, there's not much political punch in their group, at least as far as that group alone goes. Their allies, their friends, those who are sympathetic to them, their relatives are involved too. But they don't have there are much greater numbers of trailer parks in Capitola and Live Oak and in other cities where this is happening. Hollister had a similar problem. Very few trailer parks, two. That's one. And the second thing is Santa Cruz has a law which ill-advisedly, because Barrasoni thought he was doing a great coup by adding affordable housing to this law as a purpose of the law, it allows MHC or the other owners, whoever they are in other cases, to go to court to claim that the purposes of the ordinance are not being properly fulfilled, which is why he's always advised back in 1994 that affordable housing not be made a purpose of this rent control, that rather rent control be made a basis for simply protecting people who are entering into these situations. And so Santa Cruz is separate from other communities in this respect, and it's not something that's necessarily going to have an effect elsewhere. In fact, at the same time as Santa Cruz was destroying rent control in late September, San Mateo, where Constantine was speaking, passed rent control, even as the park owners there wailed and moaned that Santa Cruz was, that San Mateo would be in the same situation as Santa Cruz if they passed these laws, that Santa Cruz was wising up and you know, getting a good deal and so forth. So, again, looking through my notes here, it was passed unanimously in San Mateo rent control. They essentially ignored the arguments of the owners there. And so he went on, as Constantine did, to analyze what was done in terms of the lawsuits that MHC has filed. And he said, most of the facial challenges to the law, the claim that the rent control law is unconstitutional, have been dismissed. The only claim remaining is an applied claim. All the facial challenges have been dismissed on three different occasions. And let's see here. The main claim is the as-applied, that the city has messed up on the irrevocable participation agreement that essentially puts on price controls. And this was mentioned at City Council, but Rutkin has kind of done a soft shoe on this issue, claiming that this is not really the main issue, that's only one of the things that that the fact that the city has perhaps erred in some way or is being accused of erring in some way on price controls, maybe they haven't even erred significantly because that... I guess they kind of indicate they may have because it's such a complicated law that, and it's difficult to keep track of when coaches are sold. And it's not as easy as say keeping track of when property is sold per se. But even if they have, Rodkin claims it was only a small part of the lawsuit, and there are other things involved. You can see him doing this kind of typical three-card Monty thing that he does, where he will distract you with one thing while referring to another. But in fact, according to Constantine, this is the main issue, the main as-applied, that's the as-applied issue. And this isn't even really an issue necessarily substantively, but it's the one that MHC has been able to keep coming back to court on, or has come back to court on at least most recently. The park owners have not proved their case, nor has the city conceded it, so it's still being done. No other city or county or state has an affordable housing provision the way the Santa Cruz did, thank compliments of John Barisoni. And again, Constantine emphasized that nobody is going to buy homes when rents are raised 3 to 5 times, and he kind of emphasized that he felt that was outrageous. And it's hard to know. I mean, when you know, you will see what happens, but do you want to wait until you see what happens? The argument of DeBravo was that, and the fear perhaps of Bob LaMonica and others is that if they don't accept this 34-year lease, which gives rent control for 34 years, but if you sell them, there ain't no more rent control. So essentially, you once you die or try to sell the property, you're history, because the real question arises: who's going to buy a mobile home when the rents go up 3 to 5 times, or 3 to 7 times in some cases? So, what are you going to do? So. The issue is, well, why not accept this lease right now, and you know, you'll get some security, and then when it's over, you'll deal with that whole thing later. At least you don't have to worry for the rest of your life while you're there, if you choose to stay there, unless they find some way of zipping, you know, wedging you out, as Becky Johnson, the last caller, suggested, with some sort of lease jumping around and legal shenanigans, which, you know, there's been a lot of legal shenanigans going on in mobile home parks. So, I don't know. The danger is that if this referendum is put on the ballot, whether the signatures are turned in, it's put on the ballot, the city council, the law essentially will be rescinded, the settlement will be dumped even before the election, because the provisions of the settlement have it that it has to happen by the 23rd. Now, actually, that isn't even necessarily true. MHC could come together with another settlement. They could approach the city immediately and suggest another settlement. So all of this is being done sort of on MHC's timetable, which pisses me off, too. I don't think we should be looking at MHC's timetable solely on this matter, but apparently the city council and the city manager do. No surprise. So if they dump the settlement, as is going to happen if these signatures come on, and if MHC doesn't make a second offer, have to go back to court, pay $70,000 to $100,000 a month in legal fees. Another question about that that was raised by Constantine was, well, how about, you know, why so expensive? He figures that he estimates Barisoni's costs at 1/4 what Barisoni's proposing. It'll be $1 million in legal fees for the city. He's saying no, $250,000. So he's giving a much reduced figure. And as far as MHC's legal fees, I already mentioned that he also gives a much reduced figure. So it depends on who you talk to on this issue. Now, it has to be said, Constantine isn't taking on MHC here. His law firm isn't big enough. They can't afford to take it on contingency. You know, that's a point. If he believes in it so strongly, why doesn't he take it on? He's taking on, I guess, some aspects of some of these lawsuits in terms of individual tenants, and I don't know quite what those are. He certainly is spending time and speaking about the issue. But Dick DeBrava, who lives in De Anza and who was a city council candidate the last election, two elections ago, actually, that I didn't support, we're pretty mealy-mouthed on homeless issues, bad on homeless issues, actually. But he said, well, we've got to take these leases. It's the best we can get. It'll protect the tenants, sort of the position Bob LaMonica took. And the issue is, because if we don't, and we throw out the it throws out the settlement and keeps the rent control law, the city council will pass a second ordinance that'll rescind rent control, because they'll be mad at us or they'll think that the city will support it. And I guess I've already said I don't think that's going to happen, given the amount of support that the city has already shown De Anza residents in collecting these signatures. So some of them are collected by professional signature gatherers, but many of them are collected by De Anza residents, and there is a general feeling that this is a bunch of crap, that we are essentially propping up the city manager's budget, bad decisions by the city attorney, follow the city manager at all costs priorities by the city council. And that is something that the city in the main, once it's presented with the issue, is not going to back. It's not going to sacrifice hundreds of seniors or their descendants, or the people that they're going to essentially, you know, leaving nothing to their kids, not being able to go into a nursing homes because they can't afford to take out loans on this property because they have no equity in it at all. That stuff is something the city won't stand for. It's not like they want to pay special, give special money to the seniors. No, they just want to guarantee them what they agreed to originally back in the early 1990s when this law was passed, and that they won't be scared away by a large corporation and by the fact that Barrisoni is listening to his insurance company instead of preparing for the kind of fight he needs to make. And that, I think, is an important issue, that at least that's how I've seen it. These are really consumer protection ordinances, is what Constantine said. It's not really affordable housing. That was the wrong way to phrase it. Santa Cruz County ordinances don't talk about affordable housing that way. The case on which the landowners, MHC, is relying is the Richardson case, 5 years old, from Hawaii, where they claimed that the basis for the lawsuit was, and most of it apparently has been overturned, is that the city did not meet the purposes of the ordinance, and so it injured the property interests of the landowner because the land was transferred and involving higher prices. This has been mostly overruled, according to Constantine. There were 15 lawsuits based on this precedent were put forward in California. Only one went to trial, Cotati's lawsuit. City of Cotati and its rent control ordinance went to trial. Cotati had no other purposes listed. There was no mention of low-income housing. The homeowner was claiming that the real reasons they're trying to provide low-income housing, even though it said, even though there was nothing mentioned about low-income housing, and that this, but the judge ruled that the rent control didn't result in higher home prices, and on appeal, it's still on appeal apparently, but the Cotati won at one level. Now it's going up to another level, and it's Constantine thinks it's going to win on appeal, because they appeal these things to death, the park owners. Question was asked, how can city abandon already signed contracts? And the answer is, that they've already signed these irrevocable tenancies with the tenants. The city would rather face a whole bunch of poor, relatively poor homeowners in court than well-funded park owners. And the homeowners would have to pay the attorneys up front, and the city attorney feels he can fend off the seniors. So it's purely a financial decision, really kind of merciless and ruthless. And it is really pretty ruthless, the way Constantine was describing it, and the way I think probably it is. So the way that DeBrava and Bob LaMonica are putting it, you're not really in the fire, you're just in the frying pan with the 34 leases. But in fact, they can go after homeowners one at a time if they want. And if the people don't stand together here, they will find themselves less able to stand together, certainly as one gets picked off after another. I mean, this is the time, folks, when you stand together, it seems to me. I don't live there, but that's been my perspective from afar. Even in the class action suit, apparently, the attorneys aren't willing to do contingency fees on this case, so it's going to be hard to get something. You need a really big law firm. I mentioned this. The referendum came up. And there was, again, the considerations I've already mentioned, that folks are in a bind as to what to do. And DeBrava was saying he's afraid city council will repeal rent control, and that'll be that. But as I said, city council repeals it, then in a month you get signatures to stop the repeal of rent control. And also to recall these people. To recall these people who are cogs in the machine of the city manager and who don't mind funding a bloated police department that spends its time going after jaywalkers and panhandlers and political tablers downtown, but doesn't want to defend existing housing arrangements and rent control with seniors once a predatory corporation steps in, or once the city manager starts to bellow and wail, once the city attorney makes his decision. There was some question about the amount of money, about the reasonable profit that the landowner could make. And a point that was made by Constantine was that the $8 million that was spent by MHC to buy this property back in 1994, that there was a reasonable profit guaranteed on that, and that's not profit going up to $20 million in this situation, which or $30 million, which I think is what MHC is now estimating its value to be. That bank loan, the bank people lending money would have known that there would be reasonable profit, or they wouldn't have lent the money to MHC based on the rent control law, not based upon new considerations that MHC raised in court, but given all the provisions, all the limits on this property, however much it went up, given the fact that it was limited by rent control and then the price caps, that guaranteed them an adequate profit, and the banks believed that was sufficient for them to be able to make good on their loan. So there's no reason other than greed, and I don't think it's the greed, as Bob LaMonica says, the tenants. I think it is the greed of MHC. That's my feeling. All facial claims were denied by the courts, again in this MHC situation. Park owners filed 8 to 9 separate lawsuits in order to make it harder for the city, because the city's insurance company supposedly will only do a $500,000 deductible on one lawsuit, each separate lawsuit. So now the city has to pay $500,000 for each lawsuit, but that is being challenged in court. That hasn't been resolved yet. Only one of the 11 lawsuits that De Anza had was upheld at the administrative level. And the vilification of residents at De Anza by council members was in today's Sentinel. That was mentioned. The homeowners battling this lawsuit for 8 years spent $350,000. That is not $100,000 a month. So where does Barisoni get that figure? It doesn't cost $100,000 a month. At 11 administrative hearings with lawyers, and again, it said 10 of which were won. This is the city backing away, according to Constantine. So there's another issue he mentioned in terms of a few people who don't have leases. A dozen people have been told they're not entitled to a lease. This is out of De Anza. So they are hiring their own attorneys. They're going to lose it all anyway. So these people are going to be screwed if people follow the LaMonica DeBrava strategy. Here's a call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Rainbow Madonna, traveler from calling in from San Diego to give you a report on the state of the Rainbow Light Buffalo Nation.
Oh, cool. Well, listen, Pebbles, you haven't been listening to our show, probably.
Probably not.
And you can actually get us on the internet.
Are you discussing something else?
Yeah, but that's okay. We can make room for you here for a moment. You are calling long distance. I know that you were circulating an initiative to make it legal for people to sleep and camp outside in Santa Cruz at one point.
Well, yes, and we're actually shooting not just for Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz is the launch point for all of California, and I've been traveling. I was up in Chico, spoke on the radio about the spiritual right to camp, also with vocalizing for the Nomad Raid benefit series, and came down to San Diego.
Pebbles,
to, yeah?
Speak a little bit away from the phone. You're distorting on us.
Oh, how's that?
A little bit more, further away, or more quiet.
Further away, how's that?
That's better.
Okay. But I've ascended, and it's not Pebbles anymore. I'm performing and publicly speaking.
I'm sorry,
as
what
Rainbow
are you?
Rainbow Madonna.
You're Madonna.
Rainbow Madonna.
Rainbow Madonna. Uh-huh. Go ahead, Rainbow
Which
Madonna.
Which I've been performing since last year in Albuquerque publicly. So,
oh, okay.
Anyway, yeah, so all due respect to Bam
sure.
Bam.
Okay,
We're
Rainbow
not
Madonna.
Together anymore.
Go
so
ahead.
I've moved on. Anyway, I came down to San Diego to perform at the Dennis Kucinich benefit, and did some fundraising for the initiative, actually raised 2/3 of the $60 that we need to publish it in the Sentinel. and showed it to Kucinich's people, the current draft, and was just at a Jim Bell for mayor. He's a mayor running for mayor here in San Diego on a sustainability platform. And I saw Kucinich's guy, and he said that he really likes the initiative and there's not a word of it that he would change. So I'll be up in Santa Cruz for the Kucinich benefit on the 9th of November, and it, and by the way, Sasha Butterfly is going to be playing, and I'd love to send you some Sasha Butterfly music if you don't have any. So, and then it looks like the After Hours party is going to be in part dedicated to raising awareness on the Spiritual Right to Camp initiative. And then I'm teaming up down here with Sarvadharma Productions with the Southern California Rainbow Family of Living Light community. They've been doing some really kick-ass production on here, and Kennedy and the folks here, we're going to team up to do the Nomad's Aid benefits to raise funds for that new wave of communities for nomadic youth families and individuals. Are you still there, Robert?
I'm still here.
Great. This phone is beeping.
Okay. Again. Well, listen, thanks for that update. You're coming back to town when?
I may be up sooner on some planning meetings for the Kucinich benefit. But I will definitely be in Santa Cruz on the 9th. And let the kids know when I come through that the initiative is going, it's already ready to go to the city clerk and to the city attorney. As you know, they'll have 14 days to give us the summary and title. We've tried to address John Barisoni's biases that came out in his March response to the initiative with his previous summary and title. And we're going to be ready to rock and roll and hit the street.
This is a spiritual initiative.
I'll be connecting with the professional balloteers there and also with the kids on the street and maybe spend a couple of days, once we get the summary and title back.
Pebbles, maybe you can get Kucinich's to come out in favor of the National Coalition for the Homeless's proposal, and I guess it's being carried by a couple of Congress people.
Right.
That states that funding for cities will be cut off if they don't eliminate anti-homeless laws like the Santa Cruz Municipal Code 6.36.
That would do it right there. That would be really beneficial.
The camping ordinance. And, you know,
well,
be nice
I hope that we'll see you at the Kucinich benefit.
Well, I hope that you can get Kucinich to say something that would make me want to come to the Kucinich benefit, okay?
Have you heard Kucinich speak?
I'm still waiting to get his statement on the civil rights of homeless people nationwide. Let's have him put that one out, shall we?
Well, I got a very, as I said, his aide is sending the Spiritual Right to Camp initiative to them in Cleveland. I heard a video of Kucinich speaking here, and I was amazed. It made me, you know, I've been feeling
right.
America is like so far gone.
Rainbow Madonna, I like Kucinich's position. He's got the best position on U.S. troops out of Iraq, no question about it. But I'm talking about the issue that we kind of cover in the show very intensely, which is the rights of homeless people. And frankly,
well,
I haven't heard... Wait a minute. I haven't heard him say anything about the civil rights of homeless people nationwide, and I want to hear that. So,
right. Well, maybe we can get him to say something in Santa Cruz. It's our opportunity.
Right, or before.
He's a very nice man.
Yeah, okay, well, there are a lot of nice people around who don't want to do shit on this issue, I got to tell you. So I hope you're successful. I want to see that happen.
I know you do, Robert. I love you, too.
All righty.
How are you,
I'm good.
Well,
I'm hanging in there.
Give my love to Becky. I want to introduce you to Kennedy Carr and let him say a few words because we're going to be working really closely.
Make it real few because we're pressed
to accomplish it. You know, the mission of seeing all the kids off the streets and in sustainable communities. Here's Kennedy.
Go ahead.
Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is, you're talking to the Santa Cruz, Free Radio Santa Cruz audience. Go ahead.
Wow, I am. Oh, my God.
Right.
Well, I don't know what she wanted me to tell you.
I think she just wanted to say hello.
Down here for the last 2 or 3 years, basically been inviting a lot of the musicians down here to San Diego.
All right.
Really opening up the Southern California region, which I think is so important because it's like a domino effect.
What's the effect?
Pardon me?
I'm sorry, what's the situation for street performers down in San Diego? Are they eliminated? Are they permitted? Are they harassed?
For street performers, I don't know. Ocean Beach is happening. They've got street musicians all up and down Newport.
Huh.
We even have a farmer's market down there on Wednesdays. And
I mean, are there restrictions?
They're playing Balboa Park. Heck no. This is and you go down to the Gaslamp District, there's street musicians all over the place.
So, I mean, do they have a kind of, at Santa Cruz, we have a pretty tight set of restrictions for street musicians. About 75% of the sidewalk is outlawed. Got to move your table every hour. What's the story down in San Diego, do you know?
Well, we don't have those type of restrictions, basically, probably because it hasn't gotten out of control yet.
Uh-huh. I don't think it's out of control here. I think the city council is out of control, actually.
Uh-huh.
Well, listen, keep up your good work down there. And, you know, let us know what's going on. I'm particularly interested in the civil rights of homeless people and how that's going. If we can get a congressman.
Well, Madonna mentioned to you that we're going to be up there on November 9th for the Kucinich benefit at University of Santa Cruz.
I hope we can get Kucinich to actually say something meaningful about the civil rights of homeless people in Santa Cruz, California, and the nation, because so far I have not heard a word from him or any other candidate.
We're going. One of the things we're doing, and as well as having an after party with the Sasha Butterfly Band.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you.
Well, it was a pleasure speaking with you. I'll put you back on the Madonna.
Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Robert.
Hey, thanks for calling us.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll talk to you more later.
Okay, love everybody there in Santa Cruz.
All right, November 9th.
Let the kids know, too. I've been scouting up the West Coast and also report from Rainbow. We're still waiting for the official site for Thanksgiving Council, and we're scouting for farms to grow food for the National Rainbow Gathering.
Sounds good.
And we haven't forgotten the family in Santa Cruz.
Keep us
advised.
Everything's
coming together.
Yeah, just leave updates on the hotline, and I will pass them on.
Oh, we love talking on the radio, Robert.
And you can even call on the radio. Hey, thank
you. Love you.
Take care of yourself.
Okay, you too. Give Becky a hug for me.
Will do. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm the grouchy robe, or a little gravelly perhaps, not as grouchy as I could be. That was a report from San Diego from peripatetic, I guess it's no longer Pebbles, it's Madonna? Gosh, I got part of the name again. It's the Creeping Age, what can you do? She'll be back in town on November 9th trying to put forward her sleeping ban, camping ban repeal initiative. And we'll see how that goes. But talking about De Anza, I'm kind of running through some of the points made by Will Constantine, an attorney who spoke to the mobile homeowners group out in Capitola yesterday. He points out that he has a lot of hope in the lawsuit that a dozen people are using that against the MHC corporation because MHC won't even let them in on leases now. What they're using is the fact that state law preempts this stuff. Santa Monica recently, there was a court ruling that Santa Monica was completely preempted from any kind of discussion. So the entire ordinance that the city council has passed altering the leases, because the law the city council passed killing rent control obviously alters the leases, even though it kind of keeps rent control in a certain form in play. It alters the leases. State law has preempted this, according to Constantine, and so the city council's law is unconstitutional. This was not discussed at all at the city council that I heard when it was brought up, and that's an interesting point that was raised. Wow. So he believes there's an 85 to 95% chance of overturning the whole thing without an initiative. But I think what I have here, the question was asked of me by another caller earlier who was not on the air, whether Constantine favored the referendum, or it's actually a referendum and not an initiative. A referendum is where you overturn an existing council vote. An initiative is when you have a new one. The caller from San Diego is going to push an initiative, which is an attempt to get an entirely new subject passed by voters. This is actually an attempt to overturn something passed by the city council referendum. He felt that the city is less likely to respond to, the city council is less likely to respond with a new anti-rent control ordinance to an initiative than to a court settlement. So I would say yes, it sounds like he favors the referendum, not the initiative, but the referendum. The issue question was asked, Will's, you know, the attorney, he's kind of saying that the thing's got a lot of legal holes, what the city has done. Why not just pursue it in court? Some have asked. Well, because if it is pursued in court and if it is overturned, the city council can then move to push a new law. And it's more likely to do that if it's a court decision rather than if there's a referendum on the ballot. A referendum is something the city council is less likely to try to contravene. I mean, they'll be, I think, a little more wary of doing it, and I tend to agree with that. So I think that's an interesting point that Constantine makes. And again, he reasserted that people are not going to buy homes that have suddenly skyrocketed from $600 a month to $4,000. The asset turns into a debt. Some people at the meeting were saying that we should burn them down. And there was a discussion of what kind of rights does the property owner as distinguished from the coach owner have. And it was kind of agreed, apparently, that what it costs to set up a home on the space, the right to occupy the space, these are all rights that the homeowner has, not the property owner, and MHC didn't purchase those rights. It didn't. So the fact, when the caller, Bob LaMonica, suggests that MHC has a right to all this huge gain in the value of the situation there, that that's all MHC's legitimate profit. And I guess it sounds like Constantine disagrees with him. Why, someone asks, would MHC want a ghost town there? Because this is going to result in all these, many believe in that room, all these trailers being vacated, all these mobile homes being vacated. And again, as Becky Johnson said, Constantine suggested there'll be evictions within 90 days, put up for auction, have to sell them. Once they go to essentially MHC, MHC can turn around and sell the home with different conditions to new buyers. Indeed, as Bob LaMonica said, they could price it down again, having dumped the people that are currently owning it, having killed rent control, having killed the community there. And that could happen. The park owners did not purchase equity, in his view. He doesn't believe they purchased the equity on that. So he disagrees with several people, including Bob. He believes that they can prove direct damages in terms of the price controls not being properly administered by the city. They may be able to get some money off of that, but that'll be the difference between the rent that they would have gotten and the rent that they were getting, and in terms of the prices. It doesn't mean all their legal fees. It doesn't mean huge amounts of money in the way the city has suggested. I'm kind of repeating myself. He was repeating himself, too, in response to certain questions. One person brought up the fact, what's the cost of all these people who go on Medicaid or welfare, going to nursing homes? Isn't that a huge public expense? And the answer is it is, but the city council doesn't have to worry about it because those are state, federal, and county programs. So that's true. The claim that Barisoni has that the assessment district idea of a legal defense fund is an administrative fee to pay for legal costs is some sort of legal defense fund that's unconstitutional. Constantine disputes that. He doesn't believe that's legitimate. He doesn't think Barisoni would... Barisoni is also the city attorney for Capitola, for those who don't know. He's got a couple of jobs. He's sort of Mr. City Attorney here, as well as his wife, and Mr. City Attorney there, as well as his wife. And they a pretty plush situation. I've never called Barisoni corrupt, and I'm not going to call him corrupt here. I've called him incompetent. I've called him bad in his judgment. I've called him... vindictive in terms of pursuing poor and homeless people, and I think this whole affair with the city count, the De Anza thing, is a disgrace. But I think they're making huge amounts of money, and the kind of service they're giving the city is incredibly poor. He last year, apparently, according to Constantine, would not allow mobile homeowners to give money to the Legal Defense Fund of Capitola, but they apparently are. I think that is now pressing on anyway. And that kind of reaches, we're about at the end of the issues that were raised at De Anza. And I'm kind of sorry that De Anza and Clearview Corps people haven't called in more, because I think this is an issue that we really need to hear from those folks on, and they also need to hear from the community, because I think while a number of hard-working, vigilant, die-hard activists are out there gathering signatures, still, there's a lot of kind of consternation at the fears raised by Rotkin and the city council. Here's a call. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. One of the things that I wanted to say about De Anza, and there's
another mobile home park. Is that the one everyone's talking about, like down in Monterey County?
Not that I'm aware of. Clearview Court is the other one that's being affected by the Santa Cruz.
Yes, Stacy, I'm on. Oh, $5. It's a $48. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm in the middle of a garage sale, but what I wanted to say is I don't really believe that this management company is buying the trailers to resell to people. I believe that they're buying them, and what they really have is almost like a tract home deal, where they will buy them because people will have to sell them at a loss. They won't be able to sell them with the rents being so high. People won't be able to pay the mortgage, but like the other trailer parks in town, they will just rent them out for, you know, like a three-bedroom home, a two- or three-bedroom home for, you know, $1,500 a month will seem like a good deal to the renter.
Yeah.
That's what I believe is going to happen to those trailers.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of Bob LaMonica's argument about this being greedy home owners who want to rip MHC off for its equity?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't really care. I'm not going to characterize them because I think that they have very little to do with this in the scheme of things. Because if our government can't see that this is, in fact, the wave of the future for corporations to come in, take over what amounts to moderate-cost housing to low-cost, depending on where you're situated, and turn it into like a housing tract where they buy up all the trailers cheap, just like Canfield's buying up the beach flats cheap, and then turning it into their own housing development, basically. If they can't see that that's what's going to happen and the rents will triple, quadruple over the years, then what difference does it make why the DMs, the people, are in it for? What it really is important is what's going to happen to our community when those are like some kind of swank. There's no place to build on the beach anymore. These are on the ocean front, and they can rent them for a lot as vacation homes, as summer rentals. They can do whatever they want with housing that was heretofore pretty affordable. So I don't want to even think about why the DMs of people are in it if it's negative, because that is their home. And